Good morning and welcome to the New Orleans Imperative, the radio show that focuses on public education in New Orleans. It's privatized land where if you privatize it, you make it right. Everything is all right. This is Renard Sanders, your host, and you're listening to the New Orleans Imperative. We're here every Monday, and this is our first show after the 4th of July, and we're going to dedicate the month of July to a lot of litigation that's going on in the state, not just in New Orleans, in regards to not just the recent bills, but that was passed through or rammed through by Governor Bobby Jindal, but also other litigation that has occurred prior to that. And probably the most important case that was the decision just was made on June the 20th was a decision by Judge Ethel Sims Julian that ruled in favor of the fired teachers post-Katrina. To talk with us about that particular case that was ruled on June the 20th is educational community activist Karen Royal. Good morning, Karen Harper Royal.
Good morning.
Let me give you another adjective next time.
Okay.
And also fired New Orleans Public School principal Walter Goodwin. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, sir.
Of course, you know, I think most of the listening audience know that the teachers won this case. And in that particular ruling that she set forth, she also issued a document called Reasons for Justice. And we want to discuss that this morning. But before we get into that, Walter, could you tell us a little bit, you know, this case took almost a year for her to make a decision. It was a lot of information. But the state did try to get this case thrown out before it went to court last summer. Is that correct? Was there some appeals that had occurred?
That is absolutely correct. The state and the Orleans Parish School Board both tried to get the case thrown out six times. And six times it has gone through the Supreme Court, and it has passed the Supreme Court six times. So now we're back in state court, and I want to say it's not finished. We have won this round, but there is still appeals that the state and the Orleans Parish School Board will file.
Yeah, which quite naturally happens afterwards. But I do need to say that it was a big decision for many, you know, teachers that have been. Literally, you know, their property rights were taken from them and just forgotten about. I mean, and ignored and ridiculed in such a fashion as if they were the worst things in the world. And I think that judgment that Ethel Sims gave on June the 20th really kind of vindicates that in some way, in many people's minds, because it was finally validated by some public official that it was wrong, you know. So, Karen, I know you've had a chance to look over this. What kind of strikes you the most about the reasons for judgment that Judge Julian issued on June 20th?
Well, I also was at the trial many days, and I live tweeted from the trial. So, of course, I saw some of this as it was being revealed in testimony. But some of the things that strike me most is that I was not aware at the time until the trial that before Hurricane Katrina, before the state, before Orleans Parish signed that contract with Alvarez and Marcel under duress from Cecil Picard, that $69 million of that $71 million that had was accounted for. And that was one of the main reasons that Cecil Picard was forcing the Orleans Parish School Board into this agreement, this very expensive agreement with Alvarez and Marcel. And so that was revealed in here. The other thing that really struck me was the fact that the late Cecil Picard wrote to the federal government specifically asking for funds to pay the teachers. But then a lack of funding was used as an excuse to fire the teachers. So Alvarez and Marcel got paid, but the money that was brought in to pay the teachers was used for anything but those teachers and providing continued employment for those teachers. But I think it is very underhanded to go to the feds and ask for money to pay to keep these people employed, and then you let them go wholesale like that. That was really striking to me.
You know, and just for our listening audience, just to maybe give you guys some information or refresh some of you all's memory, prior to the storm, Alvarez and Marcel, which was a financial management firm that had limited experience in public education, was forced to be the financial manager for the New Orleans Public Schools. And what Karen is talking about, it was based on the fact that there was this missing $79 million. But, ironically, before he even forced New Orleans to sign the contract, the $71 million had been accounted for at that time, which I find to be, very, very interesting. Yeah, Walt?
Let me give you, and that was a couple of the reasons for the judge's decision. First of all, number two, on November 6, 2004, the United States Department of Education issued a draft audit to the Louisiana Department of Education and the Orleans Parish Schools Board's use of Title I funds for the period July 1, 2001 through December 31st, 2003. Included in the report was a finding that the Orleans Parish School Board did not properly account for the use of over $69.6 million of the Title I funds in accordance with applicable regulations. Number three, outside vendor Grover Austin was contracted by the Louisiana Department of Education Superintendent Cecil Picard to prepare an audit of the Orleans Parish School Board, wherein Mr. Austin would review its records, document its use of Title I funds, and resolve the federal concerns regarding Orleans Parish School Board's financial accounting system. Number four, after noting severe deficiencies in the Orleans Parish School Board's financial accounting system, Mr. Austin resolved $69 million of the $69.6 million by assembling documentation that satisfied the federal requirements.
So all of that was satisfied before Alvarez and Marcel was pushed in. And if I do remember correctly, Torrin Sanders initially refused to sign it, and the other
Absolutely.
Board members wanted to sign him. But they painted this picture of New Orleans like they have painted this picture, many, many times since then, that this system was just so dysfunctional and that this money was missing and even implied that it was stolen, in many cases, because of the reputations and the things that had happened to previous board members. We have a caller on line one real early today. We're going to take John on line one. Good morning, John. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative. Must be a bad call. He must have gone. But anyway, they really, really, really kind of painted this picture, which is really something, Now, Walter, what else did you notice in here? Karen noticed this money that was missing. What are the other things that came up in discovery that was really, really kind of shocking and unbeknownst to the community, in this particular trial?
The fact that, all of it,
wow.
to say it in a nutshell. But the very fact that they took over is what happened. And to go through this, in order for you to get a real good picture, you would really have to start from the beginning and later, because it's all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing is that they impaired the contracts of the New Orleans public school employees. They failed to follow their own reduction in force policy. They lied about the fact that they could not find the employees when, in fact, they had the current addresses of over 7,000 employees. And the fact that Cecil Picard asked for and got the money that he requested and then turned around and changed it and said that they couldn't find the employees.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I know that whole month, almost a month of trial, was very, very shocking. But, in addition to this whole money issue, the judge also spoke to some of the claims that have been made by myself and others relative to failing to passing schools and successful schools being taken over in Act 35. Karen, what exactly did the judge, what was some of her background information about Act 35 in regards to the takeover of schools for academic failure?
Well, I believe it was Dr. Barbara Ferguson who had testified and provided information to the judge. And I'm just going to say this for the general public, because there are a lot of people in New Orleans today who are under the impression that all of the schools that went into the recovery school district were failing schools. And people who, especially those who are not from here, don't understand that there were schools that were not failing who were swept into the recovery school district. In this reasons for judgment, it says, when schools opened in August 2005, the school performance score that designated a school as passing was 60. After Hurricane Katrina, the acceptable school performance score increased through legislation, Act 35, to an 87.5. So consequently, while a score of 60 was passing as of August 2005, it was failing as of November 30th. Now, that was only in New Orleans that they did that for. And so at the end of the 2004-2005 school year, actually 88 of the more than 120 public schools in Orleans Parish had met or exceeded the state's requirements for adequate yearly progress and were not failing schools. 93 schools showed academic growth. And so I just want to make sure that that's cleared up, especially because I talked to, and I'm going to say, a lot of the young TFAers who come in town, and even Kara Orange Jones mentioned this when we were on the panel at Dillard a few weeks ago. She said that, well, all of the current D schools were F schools before. That is emphatically not true. They were not F schools before all of the D schools. We've actually taken some schools and that were just below that 87.5 and made them, and some of them haven't even gotten back up to that point now as a recovery school district school.
You know, what makes the Act 35, I think, which a lot of people don't understand, I think some people do, but some people don't, and then there's the rumors and the myths that put out there, as you mentioned earlier, is that whole central part, that for Act 35, they made average, below average failing. They made below average failing in Act 35.
But I think it's very important for people who were under the misconception, because, again, there was a media picture painted horrible. And I'm not going to say that we didn't have some room for improvement. Because,
I was at every school board meeting before all this, and I was fussing about improvement. I don't think that that is the point here.
Right.
The point here is that they lied.
The point is that
they perpetuated a lie to make the public believe that all of these schools were failing when, in fact, they weren't.
Thurgood Marshall, to get their hands on these schools.
Anything, at any cost.
Between the combination of forcing Alvarez and Marcel on the Orleans Parish School Board and Act 35, those were two of the things that they did to bring this system to its knees so that when the federal dollars started to flow, it would not be under local democratically elected control. It would be under what I'm going to call dictatorship in terms of who got to spend that money.
Yeah. Look like John got back in on the line. Good morning, John. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Yeah, good morning. How y'all, ladies and gentlemen, doing this morning?
Okay.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hey, I hope you guys really stay on it, because what the state and the city did with that money that they requested from the federal government speak squarely on misappropriation of funds. And I hate to say it, and you got these old crazy black people around here worrying about some alleged $50,000 in grant and Ray Nagin's fool that sounds something. For everything, they really ain't got a case. But I'm trying to explain to some of them, you worrying about that, that's bull crap. This is what you need to be paying attention to, where
Absolutely.
Hundreds of millions of dollars, have been misappropriated. And I hope that, somebody funneling this information directly to the Justice Department, because I hope if Barack Obama gets reelected, I'm hoping and praying that he gets reelected again, so they, you know, they can really, really, this little evil state just needs to be punished. It needs to be humiliated, and it needs to be punished.
Well, John, I think you're right on point.
It's gotten comfortable in the evil for so long, and they really need to be made an example of.
Yeah, John, I think you know, filing the money trail is so important, and I think you're right on point. You know, one of the things I mentioned before, state congressional audit committee a couple of years ago, that the $756 million that was received within 12 months after Katrina has never been accounted for. $756 million that was to help the parishes that were that incurred damages by Katrina and Rita, which New Orleans got a lot of it, but there's no accounting of that money. So I think you're right on point with that.
Right. Well, you know, I'm hoping that y'all making the Justice Department aware of this.
Yeah,
y'all?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, yeah. They, you know, this and, information and is being passed on. And they,
because I'm going to tell you, and I'm trying to make it brief. And I hate to
sure, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead right quick.
That's the whole reason they're after Eric Holder, because, you know, he's reviving a long since dormant division in the Justice Department with, you know, this voter suppression. And he's going into these little rural towns, you know, stirring up things that have just been buried underneath in places, like I said, where people have gotten comfortable with the evil against minorities, particularly black people. I mean, if you look at about 2 weeks ago, they were talking about why there aren't enough black policemen and firemen in Arahan, and, you know, why what's going on with that. And he's stirring a lot of things up. So they're trying to use this fast and furious thing that was started under Bush as a distraction or some way to discredit this man, but it's exposing people who have gotten comfortable in their evil since the Bush administration, and I'll listen.
Okay, thank you much. Thanks for calling, John. Please call back. Yeah, Walt?
Let me go a little further as to what Karen was saying.
Okay.
When schools opened in August of 2005, the school performance score that designated a school as passing was 60. After Hurricane Katrina, the acceptable school performance score increased to 87.5. Consequently, while a score of 60 was passing as of August 29, 2005, it was failing as of November 30, 2005. The effective date of that state takeover of the Orleans Parish Schools. It was the same date. The SPS that designated a school as passing reverted back to 60 in 2010, and that was one of the reasons was number 50. Also, at the end of the 2004-2005 school year, and this is number 51, 88 of the more than 120 public schools in Orleans Parish had met or exceeded the state's requirement for adequate yearly progress, or AYP, and were not failing schools. 93 schools showed academic growth. 93 schools showed academic growth. The Orleans Parish School Board was making documented progress in raising the failing school scores in accordance with the federal No Child Left Behind legislation prior to Hurricane Katrina. Thus, as of the 2005-2006 school year, the Orleans Parish School Board was working towards meeting the state's growth target. The state, number 52, the state controlled and operated the majority of the schools formerly under the administration of the Orleans Parish School Board. Pursuant to Act 35 and effective November 30, 2005, 107 New Orleans public schools were transferred to the RSD. The school board has directly operated only 5 schools and 9 charter schools since the state's takeover. At the time of the trial, the school board operated only 5 traditional schools and oversaw the operation of 12 charter schools for a total of 17 schools. Once the state seized control of the majority of the school board schools, assigning work to all former Orleans Parish School Board employees became burdensome, and especially since the school board no longer had authority to assign work at schools taken over by the Recovery School District. In addition to controlling the school board, the schools, the RSD, and the state defendants also controlled most of the Orleans Parish School Board's budget. Prior to the passage of Act 35, The school board had an operating budget of approximately $400 million for the 2005-2006 academic school year. Contrastingly, the school board's total operating budget for 2011 and 2012 was approximately $40 million. For the 2005-2006 school year, the Orleans Parish School Board received approximately $17 million per month in the state financial support or minimum foundation funds. These monthly payments ended after the state takeover. Under Act 35, MFP funding follows the child as of November 2005. Consequently, the RSD received MFP money for the 107 schools taken over from the Orleans Parish School Board. But for the state takeover, the Orleans Parish School Board would have received those funds. If the state had not taken it over, the Orleans Parish School Board would have had those funds. Starting with the December 2005 MFP payments, approximately $130 million of the Orleans Parish School Board's MFP money for the 2005-2006 school year was diverted to the RSD. Approximately 90% of the school board's former financial resources have been dispersed to the Recovery School District and charter schools. The school board receives less than the state local MFP funds because it does not have the same number of students and does not operate the same number of schools. This also limited the ability for the Orleans Parish School Board to restart funding.
So in other words, at Act 35, it was a money grab, and they grabbed all of the resources.
That's exactly
all
right.
Of the resources went over, which is very, very clearly pointed to prior to even the hurricane. You know, it was a money grab.
But even though the money shifted to the Recovery School District, that still did not absolve the Orleans Parish School Board from keeping those employees employed. Because, remember, Cecil Picard wrote and asked for money for those teachers.
Yes, he did.
So they could have employed those teachers within the Recovery School District. The money came down for that purpose. And, you know, when you look at, the reasons for the judgment, the judge makes it clear that the method by which determinations occurred failed to comply with Louisiana law as well as OPSB policy. So, you know, they fired the teachers inappropriately, illegally, I guess is the appropriate term. They got money to pay them, and they didn't pay them, and they took the schools away. All this while all of us were trying to recover from the worst natural disaster and man-made disaster in this country's history.
Yeah. I'm glad you said man-made, because this Act 35.
I mean, it was natural disaster and a man-made disaster.
But, and this man-made disaster, Act 35, along with the
But levels, the prevailing perspective out amongst the community members, the city, everybody, is that, the Orleans Parish School Board was failing, those school board members were stealing money. That picture was painted by the media, and I found it very ironic that with the trial last summer and with this judgment, the media has been eerily silent. You know, they gave just very, very little airplay or newsprint space to this. I don't think any newspaper went through this reasons for judgment the way we're going through this reasons for judgment and put the truth out there about what happened. People, more than just, three of us here today, everybody needs to be going through this thing and telling the story, because the media is not going to tell the real truth about what happened because it doesn't fit with the narrative for chartering and privatizing public education.
The narrative they want for New Orleans.
Right,
it does not fit that future that they wanted. Everybody needs to be talking about
this.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do a little housekeeping here. You are listening to the New Orleans Imperative and Walter Goodwin and Karen Harper Royal, and we are discussing the judgment in the recent decision by Judge Ethel Sims Julian in the Fire Teachers Post Katrina. And in that particular judgment, a lot of discovery came out. A lot of facts were validated. A lot of things were discovered that we did not know. If you wish to call in, you can call in at 504-260-9265. That's 504-260-9265. And if you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us live online at WBOK1230AM.com. That's WBOK1230AM.com. Now, Walters, I remember because I was in the trial several days last summer, and I think Karen mentioned it. After the state took us over and after it got a lot of money and some of the money which our first caller, John, talked about earlier, after all of that happened and the teachers were in limbo, the state could have paid some of those fired teachers to do work. They had money and they were given authority that they could have employed those people even before the schools were open. And other parishes were doing it, and other state agencies were doing it. But the state refused to do that. Is that correct,
Ron? That is absolutely correct. What happened was that, and I'm trying to find that particular reason, the Cecil Picard wrote a letter to Margaret Spellings based on what happened in Florida. And with that, they were going to keep the employees employed. They were talking about they couldn't hire the people because there were no jobs. But in the trial, it showed that they could have paid them because they could have put them to work, such as cleaning up the schools, acting as counselors, going out and getting students to come back. They could have been doing lesson plans. There were a number of things that they could have done in order to keep the employees paid, because that's what the other parishes, Jefferson Parish and Plaquemines Parish and St. Bernard Parish, that's exactly what they were doing.
Well, Walter, yeah. while you look for that point, I also want to make another point regarding employment of the teachers. It was established that Alvarez and Marcel had in their hands a list with updated contact information of over 7,000 employees. But yet, when school got up and running, the state signed a contract with Teach for America, and they backdated that contract to before Hurricane Katrina. They signed a contract for $468,468 for a contract that backed up to July 2005 through June 30th, 2006, so that they could train in place 100 Teach for America core members in under-resourced public schools in the greater New Orleans area. Now, how are you going to have under-resourced public schools when you got 7,000 fired school employees waiting on jobs? That was $400,000, basically, that did not need to be spent. While the contract is dated July 1st, 2005, during the trial it came out that they pushed that date back. This contract was signed after Katrina, after the people were fired, after we knew we had a call list of 7,000 people. So it wasn't that they couldn't find people to give those jobs to. There was no need to bring in this 125 Teach for America core members. No need at all.
You know, my point is that let's get back to that contract. So, and that was one of the things that I was mentioning about discovery, because no one actually knew this. So what you're actually telling me is that in April of 2006, is that when they signed the contract and backdated it till before the storm, or was it June 2006?
It was in April.
April 2006. So they backdated a contract by probably about 8 or 9 months and paid them for work that they hadn't performed at this point, because the backdating the contract means that the services were rendered, let's take for instance, in November of 2005, mm-hmm. when in actuality it did not occur.
Right. But wow. You know, I don't know.
We have a,
I just got to make this point again about Teach for America, and I know some of the Teach for America who are presently working in this city are under the impression that they came down here, that they were so needed to come down here because there was nobody here to teach these children. They came down here and basically took jobs from people whose homes and lives had been destroyed. They took those 129 of them, who any of the 129 that were part of this April 20th, 2006 contract, they took jobs from people.
We have Richard on line one. Good morning, Richard. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Yeah, well, just listening, just to me, it just seemed like they're just trying to break down the middle class of the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
That goes on if we just listen and watch what they are doing. That's just like in New Orleans East, a hospital. Those are middle class jobs.
Yeah.
The hospital had been opened years ago.
Yeah.
The doctors,
you're right.
The nurses, all these are middle class, our middle class.
So yeah. What are people going to do about it?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. And you know, Richard, I think you're right on point with that. And one of the statements that I always make, and I want you to continue your comment, is that no city in America would lose 7,500 middle class jobs, and it would not be an uproar from the our political leadership saying you are not going to take these jobs from our people. Even if the state would have taken it over, you're going to take it over and you say these schools are failing. You've got to hire my constituents back, who I go to every 4 and 6 years to vote for me. You know, and I mean they would just ignore it.
And another thing I want to make mention to is listening to you guys. Why aren't we listening to you on 4, 6, and 8? I mean, we don't hear from you guys on those.
We're not welcome.
You can mention numbers and facts and figures. We don't hear from you guys. I got to listen to BOK, which is great, which is what I'm listening to now. But the whole city needs to hear it.
Call 4, 6, and 8 and ask them why they don't get people on who can talk.
So I bet we need to be in front of those stations, let them know that we need these people to answer.
You know, not to put a feather in anybody's cap, I think the issue is more important than us. And I think what we need to ask 4, 6, 8, and 26, why are you guys just ignoring the facts, not reporting to us exactly what has happened to this city, particularly as it relates to public education? They have access to all of this information.
They do investigative reporting all the time. They went in with the wars. Why do they investigate this?
Well, they conveniently investigate public education every now and then, but it is not a priority to them. But I think that our children, which is our greatest resource, and particularly the millions of dollars that John spoke about earlier that is unaccounted for, I think that is just as important as going after a sheriff in Plaquemines Parish, a word about, whether or not a pothole is covered and this, that. We have a crisis in this city as it relates to public education and fiscal integrity.
And it goes back to not only what you all are saying in that area, but it goes back to the contractors, whereas they don't even care if they meet a certain amount in terms of DBE participation.
No. That's another story, and hopefully we'll get Barbara Major back on here, because the Recovery School District just issued a new DBE policy, and we've got to dig into the details, because, you know, a lot of times the devil is in the details. And if they're doing it right, it's about time. But prior to them doing it right, only 1% of the minority contractors had gotten any business from all of the construction that you've seen going on in this city post-Katrina.
It's devastating.
Yeah, it is. Well, Richard, thank you for calling. Your first time calling, please call back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yes, Walter.
All right, let what we were just discussing. Reason number 80, A&M summarized some of the Orleans Parish School Board's major challenges in a progress report to the Orleans Parish School Board dated July 18, 2006, by stating, no one could provide an accurate account of employees. A number of individuals were indicted in the FBI, and other investigators were a regular presence at the school district headquarters. $71 million, of course, we've already found that, in federal funds had not been adequately accounted for. But within 2 months, just prior to Katrina, this is Alvarez and Marcel talking, we had already made considerable progress. Number 81, the financial problems within the Orleans Parish School Board, previously identified by the United States Department of Education, were being addressed as of August 29, 2005, and Hurricane Katrina. Months before Hurricane Katrina, financial management systems as well as checks and balances were in place at the Orleans Parish School Board to point to where it was on track to prudently manage and expend all federal monies allocated to the Orleans Parish School Board in the aftermath of Katrina. Number 82, the Orleans Parish School Board and the Louisiana Department of Education were contractual partners in the overall supervision, management, and administration of the New Orleans Public Schools during the time period as at issue. Starting with the June 9, 2005 Memorandum of Understanding, subject to this partnership, the Louisiana Department of Education exercised increasing amounts of influence over the affairs of the Orleans Parish School Board. The Louisiana Department of Education's influence increased after the October 12, 2005 amendment to the A&M contract, since Bill Roberti and A&M answered directly to Cecil Picard. In October 2005, A&M was expressly given the power to hire and fire, and they acted within that authority. Post-Katrina, Mr. Roberti authorized over $10 million in change orders for the construction projects.
Without approval.
Without prior approval from the Orleans Parish School Board, because he didn't need any approval from the Orleans Parish School Board. He controlled the money through Picard and the Louisiana State Department of Education. A&M and Bill Roberti effectively controlled by Superintendent Picard and the Louisiana Department of Education worked against the New Orleans public schools by discouraging the reopening of traditional public schools by fostering the opening of charter schools in the RSD schools.
Let me just chime in with mm-hmm. that point, because there is a misconception that all the schools have to be chartered because the Orleans Parish School Board refused to open schools.
That's not true.
It's absolutely not true.
It's not true.
Because when you look at point 89 in the reasons for judgments and you scroll down to point F, it says that Dr. Watson, who was the superintendent at the time, prepared a plan to apply for portable trailers or buildings to be used to reopen New Orleans public schools in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. She presented that plan to A&M's Bill Roberti, and it was ignored. It was ignored. Now, who controlled Roberti? Cecil Picard from the state.
So the contract that was forced down Orleans Parish throat, Orleans Parish School Board throat, even though they paid the contract,
correct,
Roberti reported to Picard.
Correct.
And
absolutely.
He and Roberti and them and Alvarez and Marcellus didn't listen to the board.
Correct.
Orleans Parish School Board.
So it wasn't the Orleans Parish School Board that refused to open up schools. Bill Roberti and the state of Louisiana worked together to get the RSD up and running. They also worked together to divert funds to Algiers Charter School correct. Association and basically forbade the Orleans Parish School Board from opening up schools. They could have opened up several schools after Katrina.
Now, there was something else that happened in here prior to Act 35, and I want to talk about this and before we get back to Walter's point. There was an effort by Cecil Picard to get Dr. Earl Watson, who was the interim superintendent, removed.
Yeah.
And I think Walter was at that meeting, and I know Attorney Willie Zanders was at that meeting also. But there was a move to do that. Walter, do you remember exactly, you are Karen, you know, what happened with that at this particular meeting when, you know, this vote and this agenda item popped up on the agenda? Do any of you all recall, can talk about that?
I remember, I think it was school board member Cynthia Cade was testifying about that issue. And I know I'll have to find it in this document. But I believe it was, Walter, do you remember? I believe it was Cynthia Cade who testified about the fact that there was a lot of pressure put on to get rid of Dr. Watson, to replace Dr. Watson with the guy from Texas, Rod Page.
Yeah, I think he would have been. I think Rod Page was going to be the allegedly the chief academic officer, and Bill Roberti would be the superintendent.
Right.
I think that's the way that it went.
So there were many different efforts that were underfoot to basically take over the New Orleans public school system. So when they couldn't do that, they went on and did the, convinced legislators to create Act 35.
Yeah, so there was an effort by him to really remove Oral Watson. And I also think in his judgment, he even called her into his office. And I think Cecil P. called, he's deceased now, he was clearly out of order, mm-hmm. where he asked her, told her that she needed to resign. And, you know, really and truthfully, he was not her boss. I mean, her boss was New Orleans Public Schools.
Why do you think he wanted her to resign so bad?
Because he wanted Alvarez and Marcel in. He wanted complete control, mm-hmm. complete control of these funds. Yeah, Walter?
Well, he wound up doing it because they really rendered Oral Watson irrelevant, because he controlled the money and he controlled most of the day-to-day operations of the Orleans Parish School Board.
Yeah, and that was the whole plan. And once he was not able to get that vote, then we had the creation of Act 35. And I think a lot of people don't know that all of that, because most of us were out of town, you know, New Orleans was still recovering. You know, I mean, you know, the city was still non-functional while this whole
coup. And we were also traumatized. You know, I know during that period of time, I was very traumatized.
That's another issue. You know, that's another issue. But it was clearly an effort to grab the resources. And I think that's what it was about then, and that's exactly what is it about now. Now, you guys mentioned, and I think, Karen, you kind of touched upon it, either you or Walter touched upon it, that they brought in the TFA teachers, told the TFA teachers there were no teachers here, you needed to come, even though they had a recall list, and this was all orchestrated by former superintendent, state superintendent Cecil Picard, and also Bill Roberti. But also the judge ruled that in the firing of these teachers, I think, which is the crux of the case, that Orleans Parish and neither the state followed their own rules, because they had a recall list and they did not utilize the recall list. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, there was state law and Orleans Parish policy around how that should be done in terms of calling people back. And they simply did not do it.
Yeah, so they really, really kind of broke their own rules. I think which really kind of, drove the judge in rendering a decision favorable to the teachers, you know, because you just broke your own rules, right? First you stated you didn't have any money when you did have access to money, right? You brought in other teachers, you know, you have co-opted all of the funds. You took over all of the schools illegally, and that you took over some passing schools and made them fail in for one day at one vote at one time on that, dreadful day of November 29, 2005. And then you get rid of the teachers, saying you don't have any money to pay them, when you, in essence, had really built up this and painted this whole picture that really was not true and didn't follow your rules.
Right.
And I think also they put them on something called disaster leave.
Right, which doesn't exist.
Which does not even exist. I mean,
disaster leave without pay.
Yeah, disaster leave without pay, which does not exist. So they put them on leave in a policy that did not exist, and they ignored the policies that did exist, which is it's just clearly. These 7,500, not just teachers, school bus drivers, secretaries, counselors, principals, and custodians and maintenance workers, you know, was clearly a violation of their rights, you know. Walter, what are some of the other things that you remember about that trial and that you find in the judgment that was just startling to you?
All right, let's look at number 89. Insofar as the Orleans Parish School Boards were concerned, insofar as the Orleans Parish Schools were concerned, the state handling of post-Hurricane Katrina recovery efforts was unique relative to similarly affected nearby parishes. What we were talking about before. Number one would be public schools in St. Tammany Parish, which borders Orleans Parish, also sustained substantial damage. But unlike the latter, state education officials were very supportive in reopening schools there. According to then St. Tammany Parish Superintendent of Schools, Ms. Gail Sloan, as of Hurricane Katrina, there were 54 public schools and 58,000 public school employees in St. Tammany's Parish. Every school had some damage. She worked very closely with Bessie and met with Bessie towards the end of September to consider adjustments to the way in which they would send funds to district, since St. Tammany Parish had some pretty extraordinary situations. By October 3rd, 2005, all public schools reopened in St. Tammany Parish, but not necessarily in their original site. For example, Salem School platooned with North Shore High School. Salem's employees worked in the afternoon while North Shore worked in the morning. With the assistance of the Louisiana Department of Education, public schools officials in St. Tammany Parish worked with FEMA to obtain trailers, and some schools operated out of portable classrooms.
Wow.
According to Ms. Sloan, they began to call back employees, especially administrators, to help make sure each school got what it needed to reopen. Teachers came in and helped their principals prepare the buildings and grounds to reopen. Other than those employees who chose not to return or who were otherwise unable to do so, no employee was terminated, and there was no reduction in force. Contrastingly, Dr. Watson prepared a plan to apply for portable trailers or buildings to be used to reopen New Orleans public schools in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, which she presented to A&M's Bill Riberti. But as Karen said, it was ignored. Superintendent Picard and the LDO interfered with Dr. Watson's role as interim superintendent of New Orleans Public Schools and with the function of the Orleans Parish School Board. And so this is what happened. And they could have worked.
Well, just like they worked with St. Tammany Parish, they could have worked with Orleans Parish.
Exactly.
But as you said earlier, Bill Riberti, under the direction of Cecil Picard, refused to open schools while we had hundreds of kids running the streets of New Orleans that had returned, which is really left off the map, so to speak. We had all of these kids here that many of them didn't go to school that year.
I think
as a result of their grab for money.
But I think about Forshay High School, one of the largest high school buildings in the city. They could have platooned two high schools in that building, but instead the state gave that building to Lusher to use.
And also Frederick Douglass didn't have any water near the river. Colton didn't have any water near the river, which were very large buildings, you know, that held in excess of 700 or 800 kids.
And buildings and that were used post-Katrina.
Buildings that were used, and we're not talking about the schools over the river that were undamaged with no flooding.
There are so many ways that schools could have been operated after Katrina. People could have been employed, and the state interfered and made our disaster worse.
Yeah, it was man-made. We have Lee Barrios online. We're going to take our call right quick. Good morning, Lee. How you doing? Welcome again to the New Orleans Imperative.
I'm doing fine. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I need to get more information from you on it so that I can write about it and blog about it.
But sure.
Did you want me to give you an update on the recall? Do you have time for that?
Yeah, come on. Give it to us right quick, please.
Okay. The biggest problem with the recall has been intimidation and threats, this time by the executive director of the Republican Party, Jason Doré. I don't know if you know, but he sent letters to all the petitioners of the four representatives that are also being recalled, including Mr. Jindal, and threatened them with a lawsuit if they didn't immediately turn over all signatures of the petitioners, which, of course, would be impossible to start with because there are petitions throughout the state. He told one petitioner in St. Tammany that, and I'm quoting from his letter, will wait until Wednesday, June 27th, to pursue legal action on this matter. If you resign as chairman with the Secretary of State by that time, we will not pursue this action against you. If you ask me, that's illegal and a threat.
So this is the president of the Republican, Louisiana Republican Party, that's threatening?
Right, the executive director, Jason Doré.
Wow. I mean, this is really some gun smoke, Wild West kind of stuff going on here, huh?
It is. And as a result, two of the St. Tammany chairmen resigned from their recall, and the co-chairmen have taken over for the recalls of Pearson and Cromer. And additionally, the two teachers from Calcasieu, who also got the letters, have engaged a law firm who wrote a response to Mr. Doré and said that they will take it all the way to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, if they need to, because of the unconstitutionality of the recall law itself. So, you know, we haven't heard from Mr. Doré since, by the way.
Well, I guess not. I mean, you know, but that is some very interesting information, Lee. And once again, you've brought that. We need to get you on here. You know, we're doing a lot of litigation stuff this month, but we need you to come in, and particularly when you have these nice little caveats, so to speak, to tell us. And you know, I think it really piggybacks onto the rootlessness of these school privateers to get their hands on this school money, control it, and they don't want any accountability, and they're just going to take the money and run. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing, you know. And as Walter and Karen has, you know, clearly, you know, stated from what they saw and what the judgment from Coach Judge Ethel Jr. Stated, it's just a blatant disregard for the rules, policy, and blatant disregard for children.
Yes, and it goes way beyond good and bad policy for education, which is what reformers, are trying to portray. This is all about children. It goes way beyond that, as you're pointing out. It's about the money. It's about politics. It's about power. It's about a takeover by public schools.
Yeah, Lee, are you aware of anybody, chairperson or anybody leading a recall effort for gender within Orleans Parish?
We do have a couple of people that have said that they will work for us. We're going to be having some public signings. We're still building our volunteer force.
Okay.
We have until September 1st on that. So we will be in Orleans.
But there are petitions that are going around. I don't think it's been officially announced. So you need to keep us abreast of that, that whole action, because that is very, very important. We've got to get rid of this kind of thinking. From public and these kinds of actions from public officials in Louisiana now and forevermore. Now, you have some other information for us right quick, right, Lee?
Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
You have any other info, too?
Oh, no, that's just for right now.
Okay, all right. Okay. Thank you much. Sure, appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. Walt.
Okay, let's look at number 23, the same discussion that we were having.
Uh-huh.
On August 29, 2005, Hurricane Katrina struck the city of New Orleans, causing three levee breaches, property damage, and many deaths. Consequently, hundreds of thousands of New Orleanians were displaced. Number 24, on August the 30th, the very next day, A&M established a call center to locate employees of the New Orleans public schools, disseminate information, and respond to questions. Approximately 7,000 names and updated addresses of former Orleans Parish School Board employees were obtained, and the Orleans Parish School Board had reasonable access to post-Katrina contact information with the vast majority of its employees. Number 25, on September 13, 2005, Superintendent Picard drafted a letter to the U.S. Secretary of Education, Margaret Spelling, requesting $2.4 billion in federal funding to help schools affected by Hurricane Katrina. He specifically cited a need to continue paying the staffs of hurricane-impacted public school districts while the districts were closed. He also warned federal officials of the dire financial situation faced by public school employees. Number 26, on September 14, 2005, Superintendent Picard mailed the September 13, 2005 letter to the United States Department of Education after inserting language. He changed it. After inserting language to specify that the Louisiana Department of Education receive all federal funding instead of the public school districts affected by the hurricane. Number 27, Superintendent Picard's request to the United States Department of Education for emergency federal funding included the need to pay out-of-work employees of hurricane-impacted schools. For example, he requested more than $622 million for salaries and more than $155 million for benefits of out-of-work school employees. Orleans Parish School Board employees made up the vast majority of the out-of-work employees for whom the money was being requested. Also, in his September 14, 2005 letter, Superintendent Picard, like Florida Department of Education officials in 2004, specifically promoted the need to pay out-of-work teachers, mainly to assist in retaining the staffs for when the schools reopen. He represented that a significant portion, approximately one-third of the requested $2.4 billion, would be used to pay employees because several school systems are only able to make one more payroll.
So in other words, because we're running out of time, he requested this money, and you just stated that he wrote this letter, over $600 million he requested. He didn't get all of that money, but he got some money. And what did the teachers in New Orleans get?
Zero.
They got fired.
Got fired. We've got to close this out. You know, any closing 20 seconds, 30 seconds, Karen, and then Walter. Any closing?
Well, I would just encourage the teachers and the school employees who were affected by this to start speaking out, to, you know, start using social media to get this story out there. Because while we had a disaster that led to the takeover of our schools, they're fighting other ways in other cities. So some of these same people may be employed in other cities, and it may happen to them again. So they really need to start speaking out.
Walter?
I just want to say that these people are evil. Mm-hmm. They were evil. All of their decisions were evil. The other thing that I want to get out is go to the website, www.nopsyjustice.com, and read the judgments for yourself. These are fine facts of finding. And the last thing is that there is also a lawsuit out there talking about insurance monies that they can pay us right now for. There is something that when the schools were interrupted, there's a insurance clause that says business interruption. The school board can pay those employees right now, today, if they put in a claim for the money that is owed them because they were still employees for 7 months, and they have $125 million that's on the board right now that they can take and pay the employees right now while we're waiting on the judgment. There's $125 million out there. So what I'm asking is that everybody contact their elected officials, their school board members, and go to these meetings and make them pay that $125 million for the 7 months that you are out.
Thank you very much. We'd like to announce that the Save Our Schools March will be held in August. If you're interested in attending, you can go to SaveOurSchoolsMarch.com. We also would like to say that this program will be rebroadcast on the NewOrleansImperative.org. And thank our sponsors, the Gulf Coast Fund, Metro Disposal, Richards Disposal, Fallberg St. Brock, and the Wisdom Reception Center. In the coming weeks, we'll have Willie Zanders on, the Louisiana School Board Association, and also representatives from the St. Charles Parish Board, who are all suing the state. We would also like to send our condolences to an icon that we lost on yesterday, Uncle Lionel, who passed on yesterday, who gave us so much joy and contributed so much to the city of New Orleans. So we'd like to give our condolences to the family. Please stay tuned for Talk What You Know with Reverend Littleton and Reverend Donald Jones. We'll be back on next Monday. Have a great week.